In this episode, I'm excited to be talking to Mike Peckham, Reimagine Grants Initiative lead at the US Department of Health and Human Services, together with Macy Smith, who's principal at United Solutions. And they're going to be talking about their transformational implementation of technology to reinvent health and human services grants management and how it has contributed to the COVID-19 response. So Mike and Macy, welcome to today's podcast.
Thank you.
So Mike, can you start by giving an overview of the Reimagine Grants Initiative and your role there?
Absolutely. So Reinvent Grants Management is under the Reimagine umbrella. And this is a response to the call to streamline and become more efficient as a federal government. So when the grants initiative was announced, I was extremely excited to be asked to lead it, given I had done a lot of work on this previously under the DATA Act, trying to figure out how do you reduce redundancy, burden, and cost for recipients of federal awards. So I got my foot in the door, and immediately we took off. We decided that there was a lot that we could do, but the first thing that had to happen was engagement of users. We have historically built systems in the federal government based on what is the information that we need and not what do the users need. So this was a little bit of a change in approach. And so I worked with my partners at United Solutions and we really started engaging everybody. And most importantly, the grant recipients. What we heard during the DATA Act is create efficiencies for the recipients if you don't do it for the federal government. So we started there. We came up with seven initiatives, all of them aimed at being more efficient as a federal government. But the one I'm here to talk to you today about is the Grant Recipient Digital Dossier. This is a tool that is going to be, I think, leading the change in how grants management is performed. It's a risk assessment tool, and we have been able to streamline 4 hours worth of work down to about 15 minutes. That's pretty remarkable. And if you start to think about the time savings across the federal government, it's going to be a game changer. With that, Macy, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, you know, Mike, I'm just thrilled about what you have been able to accomplish. You know, Sally, you don't often see innovation happening so quickly, especially in the federal government. But Mike has really led innovation, not only at HHS, but in the federal government. So as he dives into just how this has impacted not only, you know, the country, but also how it could impact the world and the ability to give to those who are looking to help not only COVID, but also other initiatives. I think that the people listening in are just going to be really excited to hear about that.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's so lovely to hear about it. Mike, you've talked about this reduction in time from 4 hours to 15 minutes. These are fantastic innovations. Obviously, crises like the COVID-19 pandemic cause us to innovate in a way that we might not otherwise do. But can you talk to us a little bit more about the technology and these efficiencies that you've created to reduce this administrative burden that existed before?
Sure. The approach that we took was a little bit different. A lot of times people look at technology and say, where can I apply the technology? So what we did was we looked at the problems, the issues, the challenges that were out there. And we holistically tried to tie this all together and understand where is a good starting point and what are the technologies that are going to assist us in creating an efficient process. So through meeting with all the users, and that is users from the grants management side of the house and the government, whether it's a budget analyst, a program analyst, a finance person, all the way down to your grants management specialist, we talked to everybody. And we understood that there was so much time being invested in the risk assessment that this was a great place to start. And it has to be done for every single new award or competing competition. So that means that this is something that's going to be done. It's a time-consuming, pretty much burdensome process right now. We looked at the various aspects of what is the information that needs to be gathered in order to do this risk assessment. We found out very quickly that folks were doing them, but they were not doing them in any standard way. So there was no way to compare the information that they were pulling together around a recipient in one standard baseline approach. So that really set us on our way. And then we started looking at the different systems that they went into to pull this information, whether it be the Federal Audit Clearinghouse or IRS systems, in order to get the tax forms that we need to look at in order to do a true analysis. Based on the systems that we were dealing with, we came up with different approaches in order to pull the information, consolidate the information, and present that information to the user in a consumable format. For example, the Federal Audit Clearinghouse, there was no easy way to just run in and pull the information out. The ways I had always heard about it were you go over with the disk, you download the information, you go back, you upload your information, then you start working through a typical database approach. What we did was we took robotic processing. We go in, we extract the information, some of it structured, the majority of it non-structured. We applied natural language processing to it to make sense of everything that was going on. And we have created a tool that will just show you the findings that are in a single audit. Previously, something that took about 14 or 15 clicks, and if you knew what you were doing, you were fast, it was a minute to get to the information. We can do it in just nanoseconds now. So it's consolidating that information, but putting it in front of a user in a consumable format. That is the key to this. Meeting with the users and understanding how you want to see this information. What are the ratios that you might want to run and look at? Are there repeat findings, and how would you want to see those repeat findings displayed for you? We came up with graphs, and I should say we came up with graphs. Our users came up with graphs that we were so impressed with. They weren't traditional, but when we showed them to any grant manager, they very quickly understood magnitude, continuation of finding, everything else around that particular recipient, and they could do an analysis in just a matter of seconds and understand whether they needed to dive in a little bit deeper, or they could say, you know, everything looks really good here, we can move on to the next assessment. So depending on what the problem or the challenge was that we were facing, it would have been AI, RPA, this entire tool is built on a blockchain, so we can go back and we have auditability and traceability. That helps to build trust with our user community. So we think that we've hit on something that's pretty, pretty powerful.
Yeah, that's incredible. So, and you've talked to us a little bit about the ability now to do a risk assessment quickly. Can you expand on that a little bit and talk about how you managed to put the system into production as quickly and efficiently as you did and how it's being used?
Interesting that you say, you know, into production. So we were in the process of getting, in the government, you have to get an authority to operate in order to have your system up and running. And we were in the process of getting our ATO. When the COVID crisis came out, one of our, I'll say customer agencies within HHS came to us and said, look, we've seen your tool, we recognize the value of your tool, we would like to use the tool because we are going to be pumping out awards so quickly that we are not going to have time to do the pre-award risk assessments that we really need to do. It's fine, it's covered under the legislation that it can be, the funds can be dispersed this way, but we said, sure, you need to do your due diligence. So what we did was we entered into a pilot situation with them, got a conditional ATO so that they could immediately start using the tool. And they have been heads down, banging away against our tool. And the idea or concept here is, as they run through it and they start to understand the tool, the functionality of the tool, and how the information is presented to them, they will be able to, again, the user-centered design aspect, give us feedback so we can strengthen this tool as we start to push it out even further. We've done this with one agency. We have two other agencies within HHS who are just about to embark on a pilot on the tool. We should have our ATO, which means we are free to open this up to all of our HHS customers, I believe within the next 2 weeks, if not sooner. And we are already talking to other federal agencies about the potential of piloting the tool with them, because the interest has grown across federal government. Once people see the tool, understand what the value and power of the tool is, they immediately say, when can I have this? Since we built this for HHS, we are going to implement it in HHS first. But we do have the goal, the aspiration, that this becomes a baseline for the entire federal government to do the risk assessments, so that the risk assessments are no longer a subjective one-off, but they are a very objective review that can be done and shared across organizations.
That's fantastic. And Macy, a quick question for you, because it sounds like you might be busy then on the basis of what Mike has just said. Do you see, we've talked about the technologies and Mike talked about the different sort of technologies that can be used, whether it's AI, it's RPA, it's blockchain. Do you see now a momentum in this sort of initiative and the use of technology and these driving of efficiencies? Are you seeing a bit of a step change?
Oh, absolutely. And one thing that Mike touched on, but I wanted to elaborate on, is what he has done is he has created the ability to do this risk assessment a lot faster, you know, saving time and returning funds to mission. But one, in addition to just taking sort of what was a cumbersome and paper-based process and digitizing it, what he empowered the team to do was actually look at the data to determine how we can better use the data, which is really important these days because we're seeing business models shift from being information-based to AI-based or data-based, making data-based decisions. So not only did he do an incredible job engaging the user community to figure out what is the best way for them to move throughout this process and improve it, but he was able to offer them new ideas and new insights to do that because of what we found in the data that was available, but no one had really looked into it. So sort of use AI to derive different insights. And absolutely, I mean, he has been very busy and we have been supporting him, talking to many other agencies, as well as, you know, non-government agencies who are interested in this initiative and just absolutely fascinated by what he and his team have been able to do over the last couple of years.
That's amazing, Macy. And Mike, one of the things that you perhaps might automatically think about in the context of risk assessments is it needs to be a long and lengthy process because it's a risk assessment. So when you embarked on this initiative, how did you focus and get buy-in from the user community? I mean, it's quite clear that once somebody's touched and experienced the process, then it's easy to get them to adopt it. But actually getting people off the mark in the first place, how did you do that?
If you take the approach of engaging users from the very start, whatever you build is going to be a product of what they want. And so when you go back and you show it to the users, you can say, you asked me to do this, and here's how we tackled it. Did we do it the right way? And I'm not talking about 6 months later. I'm talking about 2 weeks to 4 weeks later. You're showing them something. So the users become invested. I know it's worked on me as a user, and I love the approach. Everybody always asks me, what's your change management plan? And while I always understand there needs to be change management in a process, if you use this type of approach and you get your users engaged early and excited, the change management just happens. One of the things that I love to ask folks at conferences, and whether it's 100 people or 1,000 people, I say, hey, how many of you have a Facebook account? And they'll raise their hand, few. How many of you have used Uber? And I'll get more hands up. And then I'll say, how many of you have used Amazon? And at that point, if I don't have every hand up, it's kind of surprising. So then the next question I ask them is, how many of you had training on any of those systems? And it can't be your 10-year-old or your 8-year-old, it has to be formalized training. Keep your hand up, and usually I don't see but 5 hands up in the entire room. The reason for that is if you build an intuitive system that is built based on what users need, you will not have to go through that painful process of massive training and massive change management. It will mitigate all that naturally up front. That is the approach that we took, and that is how it's playing out. So I think that there's so much power that, I mean, you know, all these folks that did these things before us, if you look at Apple and the iPod and how intuitive that is, if you look, you know, what Bezos did at Amazon, I mean, these folks were pioneers in changing the way that we can approach these things. We just have to apply it. That's all we have to do. The structure is out there. Let's just take advantage of it.
Yeah, wise words indeed, Mike. So listen, now that you've got interest across the entire federal government to implement this standardized approach and use these similar tools to help spend funds wisely, how do you see it working more broadly across federal government and spreading this new initiative?
I put a challenge out to my team when we started. HHS manages north of $500 billion a year in grants. And there are studies out there right now that say as much as 45% of that is spent on administration. So I said, hey, can we change this 1%? Can we make a 1% dent in what we're doing? 1% is $5 billion. Think about $5 billion more going towards mission and away from administration. That is what we want. So when you talk about HHS managing the majority of the funding in grants, if we can do something in HHS and we can show that benefit and we can show that impact, if we can make this change and we can just issue 5 more grants in a year, that's a positive change. That's what I want to see out of this. When you share that with other organizations across the federal government, specifically mission folks, folks in the program office, they are so passionate. They're like, yes, they're hungry for it. They want it. So we are just trying to enable that. I would love to see us shrink that 1% a year for the next 18 years if we could. I think it's doable. And I think we would see positive impact that would not only benefit the United States of America, but the entire world, given how the US grants go out.
Yeah, that is amazing. And it is so heartening to listen to you speaking, Mike, like that, and really focusing on diverting funds to areas where they're needed more. We all get frustrated with administration. So it is so important for us to be really focused on how we can drive those efficiencies. Macy, this podcast series is all about innovation. It's all about how people have done things differently, whether it's acts of human kindness, generosity, innovation, like we've been talking about with you, social good, which actually Mike just touched on. Macy, tell me, in all that you do, what makes you optimistic?
I was waiting for that question. What makes me optimistic, and it's perfectly suited for this conversation, is that honestly, there are people like Mike out there who are willing to take a chance, work probably longer hours than he initially intended to getting into government, to truly make a difference in the world. I mean, this ability to streamline this process and save money and put it back towards what the purpose of these funds are for is really saving lives. And I hope that everybody listening today recognizes that and remembers the name Mike Peckham, because he's going to be known, you know, if not already, across the government. So I'm very optimistic that there are people out there like Mike who are willing to take the risk and do something that's never been done before and help change the world.
That's brilliant. Mike, praise indeed from the wonderful Macy Smith. What, Mike, makes you optimistic?
So I'm in my 33rd year in the federal government. And the last couple of jobs I've taken on, like this one, I've been asked to take them on. What makes me optimistic is that folks come to me and they say, we think that you can make impactful change. Can you try to do that? I've always felt that if someone comes out to and talks to you and says, we'd like you to take this job, they believe in you, they believe you're going to be successful, and they trust you, most importantly. I have spent too long in the federal government and watched a lot of the waste that everybody else has watched to have the opportunity now in my career to say, no, I don't want to have a positive impact. I don't want to make a change. I've done my fair share of complaining, both as an employee and as a taxpayer. And now having the chance, the opportunity to go out and do something that's going to, I hope, change the way that the federal government manages grants, I'm excited, because even if we can just get that 1%, think about the impact there. Just $5 billion would make a huge difference in this world.
It certainly would. This has been inspirational, listening to you both. Thank you so much. Please don't stop innovating. Don't stop doing what you're doing. The world needs people like Mike Peckham and Macy Smith. So thank you both so much for joining me today, for joining us today, for sharing this story. Thanks everybody who has been here. Thank you for listening to our Optimism Cafe podcast. And please make sure you get in touch with us if you've got your own good news story that you want to tell. Mike, Macy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sally.
Thank you.